call me.
Imagine a world where the dead rise again. Imagine you are being chased by a pack of hungry zombies. What would be on your iPod? This is no desert island holiday. This is survival. This is the Zed List.
Anyone that's ever been in a band will tell you that the drummer is the first person to avoid a fight and get to the bar. My guest today is an expert in both. He's been my best friend since the very first day of primary school, and I'm very glad to have him here on the show to share his survival tips, Mr. Douglas Jenkinson. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Ian.
Although, to give you your proper title, as we all know you, The Doug.
The Doug, indeed.
So, you've had some fantastic experiences as a drummer, I know. You've been all over the world doing your profession. Tell us something about some of the highlights of your drumming career.
The highlights. Sitting by a pool, realising that I've got nothing to do that day, the day after, and then 1 hour's work the day after that, and thinking to myself, I'm being paid for all of this time, is brilliant. Yes, I've been lucky enough to be paid to play all over the world, and that's great. On the downside, it comes at a price, and the price is all the not so good gigs that you have to do to get there, some of which you've been involved in.
Yeah, I was gonna say, the ones that I've been with you, I presume you mean there.
Yes. The one gig that I think has been probably the biggest moment in my life that's made me never be nervous would possibly be the gig we had where there was the shooting, and because every other gig after that point couldn't ever be as bad as that one. That's my nervousness quasher.
You're talking about that gig we did in Bourneville, aren't you?
Yes, that's the one, yes. Remember, we don't want to call it... It's not Birmingham. You're in the Black Country now, as the people in there would tell us. Yes, that was a particularly... It was in Worley.
Worley, yes.
The Fox Tavern in Worley, if I remember rightly. Yes.
I should explain, yeah, we were happily playing along in this gig, and all of a sudden the landlord made that kind of throat-cutting gesture to indicate someone had, in fact... come in with a shotgun. This was after he'd thrown a tear gas grenade as well in that pub.
Yes, and then we all hid behind our... We were told, the manager shouted to, and we were told to get on the floor, and we hid behind our equipment, and I looked out jealously at you and Andy that were hiding behind a pillar, and I was thinking my drums feel ever so thin now, as I was cowering like a child. Yes, it was horrible and truly terrifying, and we stayed there until the police came.
Yeah, I remember it with equal night terrors as well. But tell us about some of the enjoyable ones you've had, some of the perhaps what people you would class as stars, for example.
I was lucky enough to be booked to play for a blues guitarist called Sherman Robertson. I finished off his European tour last year. That was quite good fun. A few dates in Italy, then one back in the UK, then one in Ireland. He, for those of you that don't know him, check him out. He's a great guitarist and singer. If you check him on Wikipedia, you'll find out that he's actually played on Paul Simon's Graceland album, which is a massive, massive influential album for many musicians. One of the strangest gigs I did, I think, would be I was booked to play for a friend of mine whose material was signed to Ministry of Sound Europe. And we got a random gig at a party in Ibiza, and this was for the launch of a mobile phone. So it was like a party without a host. The phone was the host, which was very strange. So yes, you know, Sherman Robertson probably the most high profile. The Ibiza one probably the strangest, but still all brilliant.
stranger than the time you had a gig and got drunk with Johnny Vegas.
That was a charity fundraising do for the Crucible Theatre in Sheffield, and yes, Johnny Vegas was the he was one of the guests along with Victoria Wood and loads of other there was loads of other people there. I think Derek Jacobi might have been, and Una Stubbs. There was a handful of faces that you recognised. And Johnny Vegas missed his entire meal because he was sat in the bar chatting to us. And what a fantastically entertaining and funny guy. Great fun to be with. Wicked guy.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's start off your apocalyptic journey. So, as always, with our scenarios, you turn on the TV and you hear this message.
New word from the nation's top scientists on the zombie virus that appeared just 2 weeks ago. They released information saying that the symptoms to watch for are aggression, foaming from the mouth, deterioration of motor skills, and an unbelievable hunger. Be advised that if an infected becomes hostile, the only way to harm them is to shoot them in the head.
You have a little look out the window, and you notice that the undead are in fact gathering at your door, and it's time to make a move. So for a start off, what are you going to be wearing to face the hungry horde?
Well, as there's no time frame on this, like this is happening next week or next year or in 3 years or 4 years, I'm definitely going for the Converse high top white, the leather ones, not the canvas ones. The canvas ones fall to bits. You need the leather ones. They're no difference in price, it seems. They're the best bet. I'm going to go for those as my footwear of choice. Then I'm going to go for blue jeans and a plain white T-shirt. It's a classic look. It'll never be out of fashion. So that's what I'm running in.
You're thinking Kevin Bacon, aren't you?
I'm thinking Kevin Bacon. Yes, Footloose Kevin Bacon. You know, it was cool. It was cool then. It's still cool now.
If it's good enough for the bacon, it's good enough for you.
Yeah, always, always.
And where are you going to be heading to?
Now, I had several thoughts, but I think I've settled on I'm heading to Amsterdam because I'm heading to the Anne Frank house. She survived a long time there. If nothing else, it's going to buy me some time. Great. That's what I reckon. It keeps the Nazi out, so it will be good enough to keep the zombies out.
Brilliant logic. Absolutely faultless logic on survival. Cool. And so for your trip to Amsterdam... what's going to be the main theme that takes you there? What are you listening to motor you on your way?
Now, I've decided I'm going to have to go for an instrumental because I don't want to be distracted by a lyric, just find myself singing along and not running. So I thought about going for something quite dancey, for example, like the music used on Wipeout on the PS1. That, you know, something driving like that, but I've settled on something far cooler. I'm going for the track Contusion by Stevie Wonder off Songs in the Key of Life. It's quite a frantic instrumental that will keep me sprinting.
Okay, well, let's start off with a bit of Stevie Wonder. Right, so having powered your way through to Amsterdam and to the Anne Frank attic, you will no doubt have killed many, many a zombie on the way. What has been your...
weapon of choice?
Okay, my weapon of choice, assuming I can get it through customs, would be a wooden, long-handled, three-pronged fork with a metal three-pronged thing on the end. The sort of thing you find in your shed, because I've got one of those, and I'm using this for two reasons. One... I once saw my dad kill a rat with it, and it was probably the most disturbing thing to witness as a child, and an amazingly effective weapon. And two, because I spent a summer in Great Yarmouth doing a theatre summer season there, and I spent a lot of money on the Soul Calibur arcade machine, although I can never remember whether it's called Soul Calibur, Soul Edge, or... Soul Blade, whichever one it was on the Namco arcade machine. I got particularly good as Shenmue, that has a very similar looking weapon, so I reckon I can transfer those skills with my three-pronged fork. I think I'd keep them off me with one of those.
If they're training pilots with artificial flying stuff, I'm thinking training for fighting with Soul Calibur sounds like impeccable logic again.
Yes, that's my thoughts exactly. I was never particularly good at Virtual Fighter, so I'm definitely going with something with weapons, you know. Yeah. So Shenmue, three-prong fork, although hers is more like a big, long butter knife, it looks like. But I'm not going with that. I'm going with a three-prong fork.
Yeah, but much better than a butter knife.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and having reached the attic, okay, Anne Frank's not there, but you do find some other like-minded survivors there who, inspired by your long journey from England over to Amsterdam, have made you group leader, or at least temporarily, to see how your leadership skills go in survival. So, as leader, it's your responsibility to keep morale high. What song would you pick to inspire some hope?
I'm going for Freiheit's Keeping the Dream Alive, a fairly obscure one-hit wonder from, I guess, the late 80s. That just pipped at the post. Wonderful Life by Black. That was close, but Freiheit wins.
As you can see, picking a band like Freiheit, that's why Doug's always on my quiz team. What an obscure choice, but I absolutely love it. Let's hear it. Within the backpack that we allow you to take with you, you will have three books to form your
Apoca Library.
So, what books have you chosen?
The first book I'm going to take with me would be the book that my wife bought me as a Christmas present a couple of years ago, which is it's quite handy because it's quite small. I like that. It's going to be light, easy to carry. It's about the size of a VHS video cassette, if you remember what one of those is. And it's called Meat.
Meat.
Yeah, M-E-A-T. And it's a book all about cuts of meat. And it's kind of, and what's good about it gives you all the tools list as well. So it might say, you know, if you are an amateur chef, you'll need this. If you are a butcher, you'll need this. So it gives you a whole list of things that you might need depending on what scale of meat user you are.
Okay, well, certainly within the apocalyptic scenario, knowledge is power, skills are going to be lost, so useful to have something instructional. Your second choice?
I'm going for Tony Hawk's Playing the Moldovans at Tennis. I like it because it's factual, it's funny, it made me laugh out loud, it would keep my spirits up. I think it's a fun book, and once again, it's not too big.
That's Tony Hawk the comedian, not the skateboarder.
That's right, yes. From Morris Minor and the Major. From Morris Minor and the Majors, that Tony Hawk. Yes, you still want me on your pub quiz team.
No doubt. And your third choice?
Now, this is the reason I'm going for those first two books, because they're quite small and light. The third book I'm going for is the Collins Book of DIY. Once again, I've got that at home. It's massive. It's brilliant for pressing flowers. But it's also that was a present from my dad when I bought my own house, and it's just been invaluable for learning how to do things. Granted, I've not actually done them. I've got him to do them for me, but that's the prerogative of a son.
Knowing your dad, that's absolutely the best decision, I think, letting him do it, because Phil is a genius when it comes to DIY. Okay, so having inspired your hopeful crowd with your last track, it's time for maybe a little personal moment in where the horror of your experiences starts to get on top of you a little bit, and you have a melancholy moment, shall we say. What's your track?
I'm going to go for the theme to the film The Big Blue. It's by Eric Serra. Luc Besson uses Eric Serra for nearly all of his films, and it's a very, very open sounding track. The Big Blue, the film, it's based about around water, as the name suggests, and the theme sounds quite watery. But the emotional memory I have associated with it is I used to have that as my alarm clock, and it gently brings you into consciousness with very wonderfully soft, soothing music that just gently wakes you up rather than a beep, beep, beep of a phone.
All right, well, let's check out your calming sounds. On the gizmo that's holding all of your music, there is also space for you to hold one movie digitally. This could be the last movie on Earth, so a lot of responsibility for you. What have you picked?
I'm going for Cinema Paradiso. Just an absolutely beautiful film, start to finish. I like its self-referential characteristics as well. So it would teach people about cinema and film, along with being a wonderful film itself. Specifically, the director's cut, I would go for. Not to sound too geeky. Yes, once again, it's a foreign language film with subtitles, which is not a mainstream choice, but if you've not seen it, you should definitely watch it. It's in my top 10, clearly at the number one spot.
It's quite a cruelly ironic film choice, I have to say, in that you're picking a film to inspire people to get interested in film when this is the only film that then exists.
Well, no, I'm trying to preserve the memory of film and the memories of all the wonderful films, because it references lots of other films in it. So that's that the memory of lots of films. Equally, you could go for Wall-E and how it references Hello Dolly, you know, that kind of thing. Okay. So, yes, I would go for Cinema Paradiso, I think.
Okay, good choice, good choice. I mean, it's a great film. I can't really argue with that. Brings us, of course, to your guilty pleasure song choice as well. Something that's just for you. You don't care if nobody else likes it, although you may choose something that they do. What have you chosen?
I'm going for a very, very mainstream song, really. So that lots of people will like. I'm going for Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Tracks of My Tears. I think it is an excellent song. I think the lyric is genius throughout, particularly the second verse, I think is very, very good lyrically. I think the arrangement's amazing. The way the brass part fits in the chorus, I think just technically it's a wonderful song. And the overall sound, the old recording, I think it's a beautiful work, start to finish. So that's my guilty pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely, it's one of the greatest records of all time. Let's hear it right now. So you have you've mentioned your wife, you also have a beautiful bouncing boy, and you've also got some more on the way, I understand.
That's right. Yes, if all goes to plan, and let's all hope it does, fingers crossed, I've got twins coming in the next couple of months. Yes, very, very exciting. I think if anyone had have asked me beforehand and said to me, oh, how do you feel about twins? I think the sensible response would be, oh my God, I'm not sure. But that's mainly because you don't ever really consider it. Now, obviously, I've had quite a few months to consider it, and I'm extremely excited. I think it's going to be brilliant. Yeah, we've got lots of changes to happen.
I was going to say, with the preparations, it must be a completely different scenario preparing for this as opposed to when you were preparing for Otis to come along.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, just going through a pregnancy and a birth previously, you're just so much more clued up as to the mechanics of what's going to physically happen there. And then you've got the whole understanding what happens with a baby that then grows up a little bit. So the preparation for, you know, for doing it all, but twice at the same time is, you know, it's sometimes quite hard to imagine, because I think every parent will agree that there's moments where you're pushed to the edges of your patience, and when you're firing on zero cylinders, having no sleep for 3 days solid, so doing that and kind of multiplying it all by two is going to be difficult. But of course, the thing that I think we've got to stay in touch with is the idea that we already have a third person in the house, so the dynamic's going to be completely different anyway. It's not like we're doing this from cold. We've got a 3-year-old that he's got his own needs, but equally he can be his own help. He's very, very good at fetching things and doing things, and so I think timing wise it's going to work out fine. Because he can go and just help out, and he's very excited as well, which is lovely.
although he doesn't really, I don't think he really understands the mechanics, because he keeps on assuming that the baby's going to come out of my wife's mouth.
And what's the scarier prospect, twins or zombie apocalypse?
Zombie apocalypse.
Good, good. That's the right answer, just in case she's listening. Right, OK, well, let's get back to your scenario and finish things off. Your plan seems to have been a success. Your survivors are happy. You've got a very strong, defendable position, and you've survived some time, which has resulted in the group declaring you president of this new society. And the perk of the job is you get to pick the new national anthem. So, what have you chosen as your choice for anthem for your new people?
War of the Worlds, Eve of the War. And the reason I've picked this is because I'm, well, apart from its appropriateness, and it's just such a great theme, I've also like it in terms of the idea of a new generation trying to play it. I grew up with a copy of War of the Worlds on tape that stretched a bit, so the pitch went badly. So in the main theme, the ding ding dee, you had this kind of wobbly note, and I'm assuming that if we're short of good players to actually play it, it'll just remind me of that. It would just sound accurate as far as I'm concerned. I don't like that note to stay the same.
See, I was tainted by the same copy of War of the Worlds, because my parents didn't have it, yours did. And I used to come around to your house to listen to it. It's actually the second War of the Worlds track we've had chosen, although no one's chosen this one before. Someone chose Spirit of Man before. But Eve of War, again, I absolutely love it. Let's hear it. Now, earlier in the show, I did play a Butterfly Plight track, which is obviously your band. I'm a big fan, but is there any Butterfly Plight stuff on the horizon?
We've not got anything working in progress at the minute, mainly because Andy, my brother, who is the main songsmith for the band, he's focusing his attention on his new musical that he's trying to take to Edinburgh. Now he's got one of those donation schemes up and running where you can pledge money to make it happen. It's a musical set in the 80s, in the time when you would swap mixtapes and you would swap computer games at school. You know, the Spectrum Commodore 64 rivalry was rife, so it's set in and around that area. And Andy's called it High Score Musical. And all the music is using samples and synths, 8-bit synths and 8-bit samples from computer games. So the things and the arcade machines that you would be used to, things like Space Invaders sound effects and things like that, throughout it. If you want to check it out, you can find it. If you go to the Butterfly Plight website, which is www.butterflypolite.com, you will be able to find it from there. The High School Musical links will almost certainly work from there.
And maybe I'll pass his details on to our tech show guys, because I'm sure they would love to hear more about it too. My guest today has been Mr. Douglas Jenkinson. Thanks very much, Doug, for joining us on the show.
Thanks ever so much for having me.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me, you know? And that's cool. That's cool. I'm the dude. That's cool. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me. That or his dudeness or Duder or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity.